This month's episode of Practical Significance is brought to you by the Save the Pie Chart Association. The many members of the Save the Pie Chart Association, we call ourselves the other SPCA, have banded together to save a chart that is being hunted to extinction. We're talking about that wonderful, colorful set of slices known as the pie chart. Certainly, you can get better data visualizations using less space. And sure, we recognize that comparing slices of pie charts is difficult for most people. Yes, as soon as you get more than about five slices, they're hard to label and to read. And just like when eating a pie, you'd rather not have slices that are too thin. But come on, people, it's the pie chart. We've had them forever. They adorn corporate and government reports, news articles, and company dashboards. After all these years, pie charts are old friends. Do you put your old friends out to pasture just because your new friends are much better? In the words of Elvis Presley, don't be cruel to a chart that's true. Join the SPCA today before the last slices of pie are gone forever. And now, back to the podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Director of Strategic Initiatives, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Well, it's great to be back. It's hard to believe that another month has gone by, but Ron and I are delighted to have you join us again. If you have joined us before on Practical Significance, and if this is your first time, welcome. And we definitely hope that you will continue to listen. With apologies to Shakespeare, our topic today is what's in a meeting. And we are delighted to have our colleague Julia Sharp with us. And Julia, we usually start out by asking our guests to tell us a little bit about their day job, maybe a project that you are working on and enjoying. So we'll start there.
Great. Thank you for having me on the podcast. So I recently transitioned from a position in academia to a government position. I'm now with the National Institute of Standards and Technology, also known as NIST. By recently, I mean a few months I've been at NIST. Right now, I'm learning new processes and getting onboarded. I've been introduced to a few projects and teams since I've been there, but I don't really know enough to be confident in giving a brief overview of any of them. But I will tell you that one thing that I have been working on recently is revising and resubmitting a journal article that stemmed from work that I did in my master's degree at Montana State University. So that was a while ago. A few years ago, I went back to Bozeman, Montana with my family, and I reconnected with my master's advisor, Marty Hamilton. And we talked about having not published that work 20 plus years ago and decided it was time to get that out there. So my friend and colleague, Al Parker, MSU, and Marty and I just resubmitted a revision of that work. So I hope that it comes out in 2023. That'll be a really joyful moment. Interestingly, about that work, it was work on detection limits in microbiology. And we relied heavily on theory from researchers at the then National Standards Bureau, which is now NIST. So full circle.
Well, I think it's great, Julia, that that you can remember that far back. I can almost remember what my master's thesis was about. Keyword there is almost. So we want to talk to you today about the meetings task force that you chair. And I think maybe the original phrasing of this question went something like, what were you thinking? But the actual question is more like, why did you agree to be the chair of the meetings task force and what's it all about?
Yeah, so first, the meetings task force was put together by then President Kathy Inzor, and the charge of the meetings task force is twofold. So we are to provide recommendations for ASA meeting planning policy to ensure the association's code of conduct is met and that meeting attendees enjoy a safe, respectful, and accessible environment, regardless of specific laws and requirements of the meeting location. And then the second aspect is to propose mechanisms for the association to inform the community about the information on the meeting's safe, respectful, and accessible environment. So as to the question, there's not only one reason that I can give you. Some contributing factors were really the importance of these meetings. The smaller suite of meetings is what we're tasked with the task force. So not JSM. We're talking about WSDS, CSP, iCHIPS, SDSS. So the smaller suite of meetings. And these smaller meetings have been really important to my personal and professional trajectory. And the experience that I have at these meetings is really important to me. So I also feel really strongly about the ASA code of conduct, having a safe, respectful, and accessible meeting environment, and being inclusive of all individuals in our profession. I want to say that I'm also pretty good at identifying and rectifying systems inefficiencies. So, and I have opinions. So when I learned that the charges were to provide recommendations and communication mechanisms, I was like, well, that sounds like the job for me.
Julia, that's great. And I've had the pleasure of meeting with the meetings task force as the staff liaison. And I can say that in addition to working with you, which I always say yes to, the other members of the task force are just incredible individuals. And we will acknowledge them in the show notes as well. So the task force has been meeting now for several months. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the initial findings?
Yeah, and I will just shout out to the task force members here, John Baylor, Rebecca Hubbard, Willis Jensen, and Josh and you. This is a great group of individuals. They have great diverse perspectives, and I've really enjoyed getting to know them and working with them and learning from them. I think that that's always a great environment to be in, is to learn from your colleagues. So there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to selecting a meeting location. And as we know, it's really hard to change a meeting location once it's been established. So we're working under those guidelines and framework. However, we can consider some aspects of city, site, and venue space when we're thinking about selecting locations that align with the ASA Code of Conduct. So once the location has been established, it's also important to communicate with potential attendees about how that location was selected, accessibility considerations, and safety at the conference. This is a complex question, more complex than just, oh, well, we shouldn't go to this city or this state. There are a lot of things to consider when we think about a safe, respectful, and accessible environment. So one example, meeting spaces are required by law to be ADA compliant. So why should we worry about accessibility? Well, it's important to worry about accessibility because that manifestation of the law, the interpretation of the law, is going to differ between locations and sites and hotels. So location may have ramps into the hotel, for example, but no way for speakers with a need for a ramp to get up to a podium. So that's really important when we're thinking about one aspect of accessibility. Another part of our charge is proposing mechanisms for the ASA to inform the community. So one suggestion to inform the community might be to provide attendees with a listing or a map of contact information and how to receive or get to nearby amenities and essential services. So on the conference website, maybe we have a listing of local hospitals that are within certain distance so that attendees can use the medical services of the city if it's needed.
So thanks, Julia. Before I ask another question related to that, I'm going to go back to part of your response when you said why you agreed to chair the task force and you decided that it was the job for me, as how you put it. And I just want to say to our listeners that it turns out that there have been a lot of jobs that have been right for Julia. We've worked her really hard. She's been a board member, active in the Council of Chapters, chaired the Council of Chapters, now is the chair of the Committee on Nominations. So large skill set for Julia. And Julia, I know one of the things that you have done with this task force is to seek input from the community. So what have you learned from that community input? And is there still opportunity for people to give input if they haven't taken the time?
Yeah, so I won't go into the details of what we've found from our initial questionnaire because we do still want to hear from the community. So we do still want people to respond to the questionnaire. And so I believe that that link will be available to individuals at the time of the podcast. But just to tell you a little bit about the questionnaire is that we sought community input on factors that might be considered when choosing to attend a conference, like travel and lodging expenses, walkability, legal or political landscape, access to outside conference activities. We also offered the opportunity to provide some open response to the questionnaire. And we've had really good feedback. I have done a data analysis as the stat nerd that I am, but I want to hear from more people. So I'd love to hear from the community that listens to the podcast. I will say that my overall takeaway, there was one message from the questionnaire, is that we have a really caring and conscientious professional community that also value the ASA code of conduct and want to have a safe, respectful, and accessible meeting environment. Again, it's not too late to provide input via the questionnaire to the task force. I think you, Ron, and Donna also like to hear from the community. So please provide feedback.
Thanks, Julia. So now you've been thinking about meetings for a bit. What's your favorite meeting?
Can't do that. I can't choose one. I have not been to all of the meetings, so I don't think that it would be a fair comparison, but I have been to CSP and WSDS, and I went to both of those in the last meeting cycle, and I love both of those meetings for different reasons, but all of the meetings, including the bigger ones, but definitely the smaller suite of meetings, I leave those meetings feeling really refreshed and excited to bring ideas to my work, just refreshed. That's the best way that I could put that. So I will say that the smaller conferences often feel a bit like a reunion, even if it's the first time that you've gone. If you've been involved in any of the meetings that or webinars on Zoom and you see faces on Zoom that you're then seeing in person, it's just like, oh, I already know you. Let's go to coffee.
Well, that's a fair answer. And thank you very much, Julia. Back again to your master's thesis and getting it published. And good luck with that. I made the comment that I can barely remember my master's thesis, but there are two things I remember vividly. I worked with Dallas Johnson on it, and that was a great privilege. And I've been grateful for Dallas's friendship and support over these many years. The other thing I remember is that you still typed your master's thesis then. I was way too poor to pay somebody to type it. And so I was using an IBM Selectric typewriter. And so anybody among our listeners who remembers what that is no longer young, just face it. And the thing to remember that was so cool at the time was that I could type the Greek letters with it. But in order to do that, I came to the point where, you know, I needed a mu or a sigma or whatever. I had to pop off the English language alphabet ball, pop on the Greek language alphabet ball, type the letter, pop off the other ball and replace it with the English language ball. And so no matter what complaints I may have from time to time with modern word processing, I love modern word processing. All right, Donna, I've digressed enough. Over to you.
Well, and as we've already shared, Ron, since you and I met in preschool, it is actually okay for me to admit that I also remember the IBM Selectric Fortunately, I did pay someone to type mine though. So, okay. So Julia, you know me, so you know that reading and listening to podcasts are two of my favorite activities. And so I use this podcast as an opportunity to add to my reading, listening, and or watching list. So what's on your to be read or playlist or watch list? Help me out.
Gladly. So I have a lot of books and podcasts on deck, stacks and stacks, and a lot of recommendations that have gone read or unrecognized. But I will say that a podcast that I've been enjoying with my family is How I Built This with Guy Raz. Guy Raz interviews entrepreneurs to learn about how they built their brand. Recent example, so on a winter road trip in December, we learned about the Chobani brand of yogurt, for example, and how that business was built up. We just went on a road trip actually over the weekend, and I put on the podcast, and we learned about the Osprey brand backpacks and how that brand was built as well. Interestingly, Guy Raz also co-hosts a podcast for kids called Wow in the World, where they share science, tech, and innovation news for kids. I have a kid. And so we like to listen to that podcast as well. We particularly like the two what's and a wow part of the show. It's like a quiz show where there are three options given. And the wow is, wow, I never would have known that. So those two podcasts are on our regular listening when we go on road trips. Reading a book is not always feasible for me. Lots of bits and spurts. Sometimes I'll be able to read a full book. I'll just get invested. But instead, I subscribe to a few blogs and magazines. Really find it relaxing to thumb through some cooking magazines and look at recipes that I probably will never make. But it's always fun to look at them, especially the dessert menu.
Well, and I just have to share that Julia, it was actually at CSP 2023, where Julia and another colleague said that they were going to teach me to knit. And so that's just another hobby that is out there. And so I have actually queued up some YouTube videos on knitting. Now, I haven't quite gotten to the actual act yet, but you know, the videos are in the playlist at least.
That's good. I have not forgotten.
We'll keep needling you, Donna, until you get it done.
What would we do without you, Ron? Well, on that note, it is obvious that we want to first thank Julia for joining us. Also thank her and the other members of the task force for all the work that they have done. And we will conclude, as always, with Ron's top 10.
Thank you, Donna. April is here, and with it, one of our most important and irritating national holidays, April Fool's Day. I thought it would be amusing to imagine practical jokes that we could, but wouldn't, pull on Kim, our wonderful podcast producer. So here are the top 10 April Fool's jokes for the podcast hosts to play on our producer. Number 10, keep telling our producer that she is muted, even though we hear her just fine. Number 9, challenge her editing skills by putting in pauses where they make no sense. Number 7, skip number 8 in the top 10 list just to see if she notices. Number 6, use a lot of statistical jargon in a way that makes no sense at all, but tell her the audience will totally get it. Number 3, read the top 10 list out of order just to see if she notices. Number 5, inform her that we are switching from a monthly podcast to weekly, effective immediately. Number 4, mention that listener numbers are down in Vladivostok and tell her she needs to go there to investigate. Number 2, mention that listener numbers are down in Maui and that the podcast hosts need to go there to investigate. And the number 1 April Fool's joke to play on our producer, insist that what the podcast needs is more cowbell. Of course, we wouldn't do any of those things because Kim is a great producer and could pull way worse practical jokes on us. In fact, if next month I sound like Alvin the Chipmunk and Donna sounds like Marge Simpson, you will know why. Anyway, that's it for the April episode of Practical Significance. We look forward to continuing the conversation next month.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmpStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.